Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hey, welcome. We're back with America and Teresa.
Hi, guys.
Today we have a special guest, Sasha.
Hi.
Sasha, tell our people who you are.
All right. So my name is Sasha Nicole. I do contracts for a living. I'm a professor at Georgetown University where I teach project management. Essentially, I have a passion for postpartum depression, as well as destigmatizing mental health within minority communities. And that is what I do.
Awesome. Well, welcome to In the Open. We're so excited to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. What are we going to talk about today, Teresa?
Let's give a little background to our audience. So when Sasha, you came to share about your personal story, like this was a topic that resonated with our team and just was like, yes, man. So tell us a little bit about that.
So basically, I was sharing my story about my struggle with postpartum after I had my daughter. I struggled with that for about 2 years, in which I had thoughts of harming her, and it just didn't seem like it was getting better. It was a long road for me. I had no connection with her, didn't really want to touch her, didn't want her to touch me. I had a very natural instinct of like how to take care of her, but just not an actual emotional connection.
Yeah.
Over a course of time, I started to have an emotional connection with my daughter, but I still at times struggle with having thoughts of harm or frustration that I often question, is there still remnants of that? Or, you know, is it natural to, you know, at times you may feel this way, but you don't act on it. So I don't feel like it's all the way just disappeared, but I feel like my ability to control that urge and that dire need of not wanting to be around this child has gotten better.
That's awesome.
That emotion is foreign to me. So it's very interesting to hear.
Liar.
That.
Don't even pretend you're not murderous.
I didn't say I was not murderous.
That's what I'm saying though. Like we all feel murderous. You just wait till you have children.
I would imagine so. But like coming at it from one that I haven't had children. Like I have a stepdaughter, but I haven't physically had a child. I don't know how to connect with that emotion that you're having in the particular way that kind of you're talking about. But I had a question because how long ago was that, Sasha, that you started like feeling that way?
So my daughter is 7, and I remember after going through, I ended up having emergency C-section. When they placed, you know, the baby on you, I literally looked at my child like it was a thing. Like I was like, okay. Oh, it's a baby. Like, it is a real baby. And so I wanted, you know how like you see on social media or other women, they're like, I touched the baby for the first time and yeah. I just felt like it was the greatest thing in life. And I've just instantly loved and cried, right? And so for me, I didn't get any of that, but I desperately wanted to have that feeling. It just never came.
Okay. Because see, that's an interesting thing because I think what happens in many cases, you're like the ideas of what motherhood looks like is, oh, you're going to feel these moments of joy and birds are singing and everything is skipping along. And it's like the reality of that, I think, is very different. And I know in speaking to like friends that have had babies, there is a moment you're just like, ugh, there's a thing now, always, forever here. And not enough open conversations are had about those feelings, which then makes people feel like, what the hell's wrong with me for me not to be able to tap into like that maternal motherhood positivity blanket of everything that exists.
Yeah, definitely.
And the wildness of how screwed up intrusive thoughts can be. Where you're like, I think that because social media gives us access to be able to Google wild thoughts, like you can see that people are acknowledging it. Yes, I have these horribly whack ideas that come into my head. First of all, let's just talk about what it means to have whack thoughts. Or what is that experience like when you're in that moment and you want to hurt your child? We're kind of saying this lightly because I think you have to joke about something that feels so scary, But obviously we all know that this is not like the slippery slope into where we all know that we are at risk of. Like, I am filled with both anger and frustration and trying to think of these whack thoughts with like simultaneous shame that I experience them, mm-hmm. you know? So it's like, I know I'm not going to act on this stuff, but it's like, why does my brain do that?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head when you talked about just that simultaneous shame. Like, I know for me, having those thoughts, I never could quite place like, where are they originating from? But they were very, very real. So, and I remember prior to me even having a kid and seeing sometimes news stories where a woman had actually harmed her child and me being very judgmental and thinking, well, why would someone even do that? Until I actually experienced having that thought and understanding like, oh my God, like, you know, having a sense of empathy or compassion. And I want to be clear in saying I don't have the empathy and compassion comes from a place of understanding of what it's like to feel thoughts that can be very real. And for some people in which they would call a psychotic break and when they act out on those thoughts. And so there were many times where I was looking at the steps, looking at the wall, and I really felt literally a millisecond from actually acting out on the thoughts that I had. And I did feel a sense of immediate shame, of immediate embarrassment. Like, I felt like there was nobody that I could express that to,
right,
who wouldn't then say, you know, I'm going to go call the police or I'm going to call a social worker and remove the child from the home. But I also, you know, I didn't really know what to do with the thoughts or why I was having them.
I think that's an interesting aspect, though, where you're second guessing yourself, right? From the moment that you start having these thoughts where you're just like, is it really me that's having these thoughts? What's happening, right? Because you can't really talk about it. I think that's an underlying thing to all of this, that people are just afraid of what that means and what it could do for a relationship.
It does get especially scary when you feel like your thought doesn't come from you. At least when I've had thoughts, I've had some where I was like, oh, I know that that's coming from me. But there were some thoughts where I was like, where is this thought coming from? But not like, where is this thought coming from my past experience? It's like a thought that I feel like I am not having, which is a term in psychology where people talk about like a kind of intrusive thought where it's a slippery slope where you start to feel like somebody is controlling your mind. And that thought comes from something that is so bizarre. It doesn't make any sense that you would have that thought.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you saying that is because I'm not deeply into church, but, you know, for the people who are, you know, they would probably hear that and oftentimes say that it's an evil spirit or demon. And honestly, there was a point where literally I'm like begging on the floor, crying, asking God, like, please remove these thoughts, because I really felt like, is this like my subconscious? Mm-hmm. Is this me? Like, is this really my brain speaking, or is it like something else? Like, yeah. Because I wouldn't normally, like, I don't look at children and feel a need to harm them, but I look at my child sometimes and I want to harm her. And it's like, what is that? You know, or, and then I would even question the validity of like my brain. Like, do I have like some sort of psychosis, like disorder, or like what the hell is wrong?
It's a slippery slope. We are all capable of that, right? Experience with enough stress and enough sleeplessness and enough childhood trauma, and just like, it's always there, it feels like, and pressures from the outside about what you should do or not do. And then a screaming experience where this thing is so demanding. Children are unlike any other demand, I think.
So, Sasha, help me understand like your experience early on when this started happening. Like, tell me about what it was like early on about your experience.
So, you know, after I had that feeling of like, I knew that, why didn't I have this connection? Why don't I feel this instantaneous love that these other women on social media or other women that I've known talk about, like, what is wrong with me? And so then it was finally time to go home. And I was alone. My daughter's father was an over-the-road driver and just wasn't home like that. So I'm just in the house by myself. I don't have a lot of family. I tried to talk to my father, who's military, and about what was going on with my stepmother. My stepmother was compassionate, but my father was like, get over it. Like, It's just, you're not the only mom in the world. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, you know, he definitely reiterated the shame that I felt, as though the thoughts that I was having were invalid. You know, so I tried to talk to my daughter's father about it. And his response was that you're her mom. This is what you're supposed to do. And so there was just no sense of support. And then, you know, when you go to your doctor checkups and the doctor's like, well, how are you feeling? And things like that. And it's like, I didn't feel like I could trust that doctor.
Yeah.
The importance of sometimes comfortability with one's physician is very important, and even cultural understanding. Because for me, being a young Black woman, I already felt stigmatized, one, that I'm married now, but my daughter's father, my husband is not my daughter's father, but he is her father. And so at that time, not being married, being a woman of color, and just that stigma, I just didn't feel comfortable. And I felt like if I expressed how I was feeling, then they would take my kid, yeah, or they would put me in a category of shame, of a statistic. And that, yeah, wasn't the case for me. And so I started to express some of my thoughts to my gynecologist, well, my OBGYN, when I went back. And her first immediate thing was to just give me Zoloft. And so for me, I didn't feel like, I didn't want that to just be the answer. Like, oh, here's some Zoloft. Like, I wasn't just asking for a pill. Like,
right.
For me, I was asking for help. Like, I didn't know what to do. And I tried to like maybe find some groups or just something going on. And there was just nothing that I could find during that time. And in the location that I was at, which was a very rural area, and that was a predominantly white area, where I felt like there was anyone who could relate to what I was experiencing. And so it just persisted on. And eventually, about two years later, we were driving one day and there was this horrible accident. And I remember looking out the side of my window as we were passing along in traffic, and she was in the back seat. And I just randomly thought to myself, and I was just like, God, if like we're ever in an accident, let her live and take my life. And it was almost like, I wouldn't say immediate, but that was the start of me finally understanding the capacity of love that I felt for this little being that I just didn't know existed. And that was really the onset of that change and realizing that to recognize I would give my life in order for her to have hers was a real turning point in the unconditional feeling that I've heard parents speak of.
So when you think about, because you have a shift from the feeling that you had about harming your child early on and the difference that you feel now, like what changed?
I think for me, the biggest point of my journey was acknowledging that these feelings that I had were valid. I didn't necessarily know where they came from. I had suffered from depression before my past, anxiety and depression, and that is something that I dealt with and deal with currently. It was a constant conscious effort of me trying to choose not to act out on the thoughts that I was having. And for me, that worked, but I also, you know, still have to sometimes consciously choose not to act out on even current thoughts that I may have where I feel like I want to harm her, where I feel like I wish I never had a child.
Yeah. It does feel easier today, though.
It feels much easier. And I often think or wonder if some of my experiences growing up and what I went through as a kid and also like the method of choice with me growing up was definitely physical violence to a whole nother level, if that played any part in the way that I also looked at and treated my own child.
So, Sasha, you talked about a couple of things that I want to go back to. At the beginning, when you're talking about feeling comfortable with your doctor or your pediatrician, and this idea of not wanting to be marked like as a stereotype, right? I think that's a huge component of what it is to be able to openly share your feelings in a safe space, right? To know that it's going to be acknowledged in a way that is validated and you're not made to feel like something is wrong with you, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's what I heard from what you shared. And then the other thing is where you go to supposedly somebody that's going to help you, right? Like your OBGYN, and they prescribe medication. I know a lot more is being done with postpartum depression and all that right now, where more and more information is being put in front of mothers so that they are aware of these issues. Do you think that it could have changed anything for you, like if that were made available?
Yeah, absolutely. Because no one has suggested, hey, there's a support group called this. Hey, you know, even though you're a Black woman here, there is a group that, you know, that are culturally competent that may be able to help or relate. Here's a psychologist or therapist of what I would recommend. Like, no one offered resources. Like, it was literally, oh, well, you know, here's a prescription, or you're just a first time mom. It's you don't know what you're talking
it's
about.
It's part of the process.
It's part of the process, or maybe it's just baby blues. And I was never that honest with any doctor to say, no, you don't understand. I literally feel like I'm going to throw this baby against the wall, because I felt like there was no way that I could tell someone that. Because even when you think about therapy, the first thing they say to you is, I'm obligated by law that if you say to me that you're going to do A, B, and C, I must report it. So in my head, I'm like, I'm not going to say that. And then you report me.
Right. Like, I know.
So I'm thinking instantly, like, I'm not going to share the real thoughts that I'm having. I'm just going to dance around it.
Yeah. I kind of want to go back to what you said, which is like, you don't, it's hard to understand what it was that switched. But to me, when you described what it was, it's, that is the trajectory of postpartum depression. You know, it's like, we're waiting for that depression to go away. And when you don't have a name to what your experience is, the only name you give it is that you're a crappy mother, or it just feels out of control. Like, I don't know. But I think because, and I don't know if this was like what it was like for you, but because I had experience with depression in the past, once I realized that what I was experiencing was postpartum depression, a bit of me was like, it has a name. This is what that is. I can name it, claim it, do something about it. Because before that, like the first time I had postpartum depression, oh my God, it was awful. Because it was just like everything you described, and like sitting like that for 18 months or just not knowing when it was ever going to change, versus the second time being able to prepare for it and be like, I know I'm going to experience this thing, and it helps so much better. And it didn't change necessarily. Like, I still had to wait it out. Like, it still took way longer than it was supposed to. Like, 2 freaking years. You're like, who told you? There's nothing in the stupid what to expect handbook that postpartum depression doesn't last 6 months postpartum. It's like 2 years postpartum.
Absolutely. Because after the first year, and I'm like, I still don't feel this connection. You know, what the heck is going on? And then it kept going. And then it's like, even in the beginning phases, in the first few months, and they go, oh, it's just the baby blues. And it's like, okay, well, the baby blues stage is over now. Now I'm a year and a half, and I still really don't like this thing in front of me. And like you said, there was no real information or handbook that said, hey, you know, it could be a few years. And then it's like, well, what am I supposed to do for these few years while I'm feeling this? Like, what now? And it wasn't until well after the fact that I had even recognized or even got enough resources and information to know what I had actually went through and was going through.
Yeah.
There's this emotional aspect to what you're saying, where from what both of you guys are sharing is this feeling of just questioning everything that has to do with your identity as a, you know, in quotes, mother, right? And what that means, and all these expectations that the world is, society has put on you. And then you start internalizing all those things and questioning every single aspect of what is supposed to happen while managing the life of a little thing.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm actually curious, America, because like, you are a coworker of mine. And when I was going through this period, like, it's hard not to spill. So like, if I'm okay, I can contain the intrusive thoughts or the things that are in my mind. But I also knew that I was in periods where I couldn't contain the thoughts, and they would spill, and America would see some of that. It would come out as me saying really weird things to people when they would ask me about my children.
Yeah, Sasha, like, you wouldn't know this, but Teresa sometimes does say things that, like, I don't know, you're like, what the hell are you thinking, yo? And like, I love kids. Like, I love kids. I'm very good with kids, you know. So when she would say that, I would be like, Teresa, And she'd be like, I'm sorry. Okay. But what I think is interesting about that is that it was a safe space. And even though we may not necessarily understand where you're coming from, we knew that you needed to say it to feel whatever way you needed to. I think what is even more important, like beyond the safe space aspect to it, is that people may not necessarily be comfortable in using humor in the way that we're like laughing about things right now during the session. You know, people are like, how can you laugh at this? This is a serious topic and you have to, you know, it's like, dude, life doesn't require for us to be consistently by the book for us to be able to empathize with one another, because that's not what's going to happen. So we have to be able to speak in a way that is our true self.
Yeah.
Without that, then I can't go out and share. Sasha can't talk about these things openly, you know?
Yeah. And I wonder if that's what for Sasha her experience was, because it's like, I do feel so grateful that I had a space where I could talk or say the things out loud, because it was a release valve, right? And it's like, if you don't have that, it festers.
Oh, yeah. And that was something that I didn't have. You know, like I would have never been able to make some of the comments I made or comments I felt out loud in any capacity, work, friends, family, you know, and like I said, even when I did express it to, you know, my family, it was like, I mean, girl, like, get over it. Like, it was invalid. And that was really hard, because I'm literally left trying to, like you said, it's festering and I'm trying to deal with it on my own by myself. And so now, like, I am very similar to Teresa, like very sarcastic. And I do say most of what I'm thinking without any thought, which is not always the best thing. I know at the end of the day, you know, that I'm not a bad mom. I have made some mistakes, but I'm also accountable and owning all the things that I want to continue to improve on and do as a mother, as a person. And sometimes I feel bad for those people who are like, they are living in a lie at times, refusing to acknowledge some of the feelings that they're having. And I do get a sense of freedom being able to discuss it now and be okay, despite any judgment that someone else may have.
Yeah. You know, right now where we're living, the moment that we're living in, all of us, you know, a lot of parents are now at home with their kids. Most are. But there's this idea too that for the most part, a lot of the kids would go to school. You know, you shuffle them off to school. They're there for X amount of hours and then eventually come home and you have this routine and boom. And you're connecting with them in whatever way you think is right. But now they're just in your face. And on top of that, it's like, you have to, well, based on what people are saying, you know, you're supposed to give them some educational content throughout the day, right? So that your brains are not being fried by television and Netflix and X things. But then the question comes up that I think what you have said is you do have, one, a power in that you are able to share your emotions so openly and your experiences, because so many people don't talk about it. They create like this picture perfect Hallmark. Here's your picture, you know, look at the happy family. And it's like, dude, if you like would brush away all this like watercolor art and all that, there's so much crap that's hidden beneath that if we don't talk about it, then it doesn't allow anybody to understand that whatever struggles they're having at home with me just being able to like not want to knock my kid upside the head because they said something stupid, or, you know, my husband or anything, that it's not questioning you as a mother or your ability to mother or your willingness to sit in that space. I think that's just so important to everything that you've said.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's acknowledge and give ourselves grace that it's not going to always go the way that you envisioned it.
Yeah.
It has gotten easier, though, don't you think? Like, because of technology and the internet, you can find spaces to, and I wish that I had access to that 6 years ago, 5 years ago, but I'm grateful that I have it today.
It has. It's gotten a lot easier. There's more resources. There's more groups. There's more information. There's a lot of things available now, and even the technology, you know, for children. So it has definitely started to shape a path. You know, there's a rainbow at the end of this, and I've been able to work through that and go through these growing pains, but then also collect some information and knowledge along the way and help others.
You know, Teresa, a while ago, Sasha, I can't even remember when we talked about this, but Teresa had talked about this idea of when we're struggling with all of these types of thoughts, intrusive thoughts, experiences that people don't normally talk about. And then we kind of pop the balloon and be like, hey, we've been thinking all these things. You want to talk about it? It can be very shocking for people, you know? And I wonder now that you've kind of experienced all of this for the last few years and the work that you're doing with your podcast and things like that, do you find that people are more open to having conversations about this with you or like listening to you? Like, what's that been like?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it has helped tremendously. And I think my honesty about it has really been the gateway that has allowed more people to listen and be and relate, whether they had say it out loud or not. I had started an organization called Partum Evolution, which is solely dedicated to helping women of color through postpartum depression. And so being able to share my story and my why, and why I created it, why I'm doing this, has definitely helped a lot more women who will come to me even in secrecy and say, can you talk to me? Is there something that I can do that normally wouldn't say anything, but being able to know that my story is real for me and to my experience and resonates with them in some way. Or I've had a lot of women reach out to me because they know someone that they don't relate to, that story doesn't resonate with them, but they see that they're struggling and have asked me, would you talk to them? This is my sister. This is my friend. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. Can you point them in the right direction? And I think that's the part where being genuine and sharing your experience really can help others.
Let's talk about what, now that we look back and just like for parents who are struggling, either if you have a baby, and it's very common to want to harm your child. This is something you can literally Google and see it. Like, I want to harm my new baby, to I just want to kill my children. What do you want to tell people?
I think that, you know, I'd like to tell people, you know, to, again, going back to that word, like, allow yourself grace, be honest with what you're feeling, what you're experiencing, and then take a look at, you know, when you use that word mirror, like, what your past looks like. Because for me, like, I grew up as an abused child. And I know that that is not the parent, the mother, the anything that I want to be to my child, where I'm exhibiting harm as a means for expressing my anger. And so being able to recognize that, work on that, like, that's what I know. That's what I grew up in. That's my first instinct when I first had a kid, is like, you hit them, because that's what was my experience. And especially when we take it back to some, and I don't know in every person's household, but I know, like, for the Black community, it is usually always hit first, talk later. And so that was my experience. And it just went to another level as I was growing up. And so acknowledging all of those things, working through them, like looking for those resources, being willing to share what you're going through, talking to someone, finding a therapist, and then recognizing like where you are. Because in a lot of places, like the area that I was in at that time, because of how rural it was not a lot of resources. However, if I was in that same situation, or if there's a woman out there who's in a very rural area, who's in an area that doesn't have a lot of economic resources, you know, utilize this technology that we have to find, you know, available data, to use the electronics that we have to be able to virtually connect with someone. So there's a lot of different options now available that wasn't before. And so I would encourage anyone to reach out. And then, of course, you know, you can reach out to me, and I'm always willing to talk to anybody. But there's a lot more available that I think that everyone should be willing to tap into. And if you recognize or feel something that you just don't think is right, like, don't run from that. I think that we have to be okay with saying, like, this doesn't feel good. This doesn't feel okay for me. And I want to do everything that I can to try to make it better.
Yeah. I really resonate with that, like, self-compassion and explicitly, as people who experience childhood challenges, my husband and I both explicitly said that we had to do better than our experiences, the range of them. Everybody has some range
right.
of experience, right? And it's like, what you said was actually what we decided as well. It's like, I am not going to be the best person that I want to be with my children or with my husband or partner. But what we can commit to is if we have moments where we act out in ways that we don't like, that we have to then model what it means to recover or repair. But it takes time to think about what is that new way? Like, what is happening to me in my life right now? And what is the new way I want to be? And approach life like, and put energy into that life that you want to be. It takes time. You're like, you have to put thought into it.
So I have a question because Teresa talks about having her husband, and you've also talked to Sasha about having your husband around. And do you find now, after, I don't know how long you guys have been together or anything, but you know, where you are now and you're openly speaking about these issues, does that make any difference in, or what kind of support have you received from them?
My husband, so we've been together 6 years now, he's supportive in me, you know, expressing my story, expressing my thoughts, him knowing everything about, you know, what has transpired. I see the most support when he sees the disconnect or the anger. And there have been moments where it's like, he's noticed that rage and be like, you know what? I got it. Like, go ahead. You know what I mean? And that has been extremely helpful in those moments. Whereas if he wasn't around on my journey to recovery and healing and just being aware, I don't necessarily know what my reaction would have been without having that help. So I definitely appreciate that. And that has been incredibly helpful. It's also been a learning experience too for him because, and I want to be careful in my language in saying this. There's just a certain instinct that men don't always have with children that as a mom, as a woman, that you also have to kind of like teach them in certain areas. And when I say teach them, teaching them the help that you need or what it is that you would like them to do in going through certain experiences as a mom. Because the reality is that they don't go through the same thing carrying a baby and the trauma and the things as a mother. So having someone who's been open to saying, okay, well, what does that look like? What does this mean? What do you need? That has been definitely a great resource, and being willing to talk about it has then also helped him become a better help to me, but even a better supporter, you know, of our daughter, for him to do the things that I need that I don't always have to say. Because sometimes, like, you know, it's kind of like I always tell the story, like my husband has our daughter because I'm on travel and I'm like, did she eat? And he'd be like, well, she said she wasn't hungry. And I was like, does a 7-year-old get to tell you? Like, he's like, well, she said she wanted chips, you know, but like all in all, I'm saying that say it has been helpful. But I've also had to play my part in making sure that I'm expressing my needs as well.
I think that's the case of anybody, though, that is a support mechanism, right? That you have to be able to voice what you need so that they're able to then respond in a way that would be useful, right? And not some random thing that's just like, really? Did you just do that?
Right.
I understand that. The chips. Right. Thing. They ate, no, not goldfish crackers, like a meal.
Yeah.
Right.
I wanted to share, though, in terms of thinking about resources, Postpartum Support International has a helpline that people can call into. It's 1-800-944-4773. You can look it up, Postpartum Support International. And it's also available in English and Spanish. You can text them. There are a bunch of resources on there, too. But Sasha, tell people what like your website is, where they can find you.
Absolutely. So you can go to partumevolution.org. That's my website. And that's P-A-R-T-U-M evolution, E-V-O-L-U-T-I-O-N, partumevolution.org, to look at the resources that I have there and see the work that I'm doing. You can also check out my Instagram, partumevolution. I'm also The Real Sasha Nicole on Instagram, and you'll see a lot of the other work and stuff that I'm working on. And as mentioned, the podcast in which we talk about other things and resources as well for a variety of topics at American Therapy, and that's with a K.
if people are interested in taking a screen at mhascreening.org, mhascreening.org, we do have a depression screen on there, and just it does help for some people who are just struggling with thoughts and you need to figure out if that's what you're struggling with. But MHA is hoping to post our perinatal screen. So we'll have that available for moms as well, and then work on developing resources at the end, which will include this podcast. Whoop, whoop.
Ooh, ooh.
Well, thank you, Sasha, for spending time with us today and, you know, bringing to light this experience, because I think it's an important one. We think, not just I think. And for just spending time with us, because we love that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you both so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Alrighty, everybody.
Bye, you guys.
Keep on fighting in the open.